Hello, it is Ryan, and I was on a flight the other day playing one of my favorite social spin slot games on ChumbaCasino.com. I looked over at the person sitting next to me, and you know what they were doing? They were also playing Chumba Casino. Coincidence? I think not. Everybody's loving having fun with it. Chumba Casino is home to hundreds of casino-style games that you can play for free anytime, anywhere, even at 30,000 feet. So sign up now at ChumbaCasino.com to claim your free welcome bonus. That's ChumbaCasino.com and live the Chumba life. No purchase necessary. VGW. Void or prohibited by law. See terms and conditions. 18 plus. Hello, it is Ryan, and we could all use an extra bright spot in our day, couldn't we? Just to make up for things like sitting in traffic, doing the dishes, counting your steps, you know, all the mundane stuff. That is why I'm such a big fan of Chumba Casino. Chumba Casino has all your favorite social casino-style games that you can play for free anytime, anywhere with daily bonuses. That should brighten your day a little. Actually, a lot. So sign up now at chumbacasino.com. That's ChumbaCasino.com. No purchase necessary. VGW. Void. We're prohibited by law. See terms and conditions. 18 plus. Hello, it is Ryan, and I was on a flight the other day playing one of my favorite social spin slot games on ChumbaCasino.com. I looked over at the person sitting next to me, and you know what they were doing? They were also playing Chumba Casino. Coincidence? I think not. Everybody's loving having fun with it. Chumba Casino is home to hundreds of casino-style games that you can play for free anytime, anywhere, even at 30,000 feet. So sign up now at ChumbaCasino.com to claim your free welcome bonus. That's ChumbaCasino.com and live the Chumba life.
No purchase necessary. VGW. Void where prohibited by law. See terms and conditions. 18 plus.
Jonathan Pearce.
The mad side of genius.
Terry Alderton. The Football Friendly.
Hello everybody, welcome to JP&T, the Football Friendly. It's a bit of a somber week for us this week, isn't it, Terry?
Well, it's horrible, isn't it? I mean, Francis Lee went last week and then all of a sudden, I mean, the sad thing was with Mr. Charlton, it was always on the cards there, wasn't it? And with the dementia and what have you, but then, you know, it's one of those things when someone then does pass on, you're like, oh, wow. I couldn't believe it when I got my son texted me. I was like, you've got to be kidding. It's a horrible feeling. Horrible feeling. Very,
that's
very
right.
Sad.
I mean, we've known since November 2020 that he'd been diagnosed with dementia, but he withdrew from public life. But even then, you know, there was a dignity about his last 3 years and a grace about everything he did. You know, he died on October the 21st, 86 years of age. And obviously we send our best wishes out to him, the Charlton family, and also the greater Charlton family, which is all football fans, I think. You saw at the weekend the reaction. His death was, you know, the reaction to his death from football fans. Where there was a minute's silence, there was a minute's applause. People were singing, "There's only one Bobby Charlton" at the Villa West Ham game. And it's true, you know, I was lucky enough to meet him on a number of occasions. I won't say I knew him well because I didn't. I met him when I was with Bobby Moore on a few occasions. He was a quiet man. He was a humble man, very, very dignified in everything he did. And He was a bridge, Terry, for me, between, if you like, the Munich air crash era, and more on that in a minute, and then the TV era that came in the 70s, the glitz and glamour era that followed. Bobby was really the bridge, I think, for that. He's, you know, there aren't many stellar names left from that period of the game, and now we only have one left from 66, of course. He was known for his exploits in the World Cup final, quite rightly so, because he played a huge role in England winning that competition in the semi-final against Portugal. He opened the scoring, lovely goal from a Roger Hunt run, and the second was a fantastic shot from the Jeff Hurst pullback. But, you know, you think of his role that he played against Argentina, where things went wrong on the pitch. It was one of only two cautions in his game, in his life, you know. But he played a big role in that, in not letting England be steamrolled by the events that were happening off the ball, if you like. You know, though he didn't have a wonderful World Cup final in 1966, you know, he and Beckenbauer sort of marked each other out of the game. He was just a legend in that side. He was a pillar of the side. He'd come through from 62, the World Cup in 62. And I don't think really up until then there had been attacking midfield players like him. He sort of broke the mould in that. He became a link between the centre forward and the core of the midfield, if you like. He broke the mould as an attacking midfield player. He was a wonderful football player. You know, 1966 European Cup final, we'll remember that, which was a decade on from the Munich air crash, and what a role he played in that game for Manchester United, which was absolutely sensational. And the flicked header, everyone remembers, you know, the image of that, and it was such a highly emotional night. And as United's captain, he lifted that trophy that meant so much to the football club, to the environment, to the city of Manchester as well. This is a player who was Footballer of the Year, who was European Footballer of the Year, who won the Ballon d'Or. You know, few British players have won the Ballon d'Or. People seem to forget that Bobby did, but he did. And all this, you know, was after the Munich air crash, when, I don't know if you know the situation, Terry, but they were so nervous of the flight because a couple of takeoff attempts at Munich had gone wrong. The players were getting more and more nervous. So he and Dennis Violet swapped places with Tommy Taylor and David Pegg. They thought it would be safer at the back of the plane.
Right.
The plane crashed. Tommy and David Pegg were killed, and Bobby and Dennis Violet were pulled out by Harry Gregg, the goalkeeper, and he thought they were dead. You know, he pulled them up. He thought they were dead. And he went back to rescue other players. He got back out, and they were walking around. And Bobby only suffered cuts to his head, shock, but the bruise to his heart, I think, lasted the rest of his life. And he carried that with him. He carried the memory of those teammates who he lost. And that was so evident in '68. You know, that was the first game, Terry, I was allowed to stay up and watch in midweek. It was a school night, and I remember watching it. And you know, as I say, he was a bridge between the eras. You know, he played such a role at Manchester United after he retired as a football player. He wasn't a great manager. You know that he was manager at Preston North End. So few of those 66 team mates were successful managers. It's weird, that, isn't it? But he just carried on serving Manchester United as an ambassador, and what an ambassador he was. He kept picking up awards throughout his career, throughout his life, I should say. He kept working for charities, cancer charities, I know that. He worked for Landmine Clearance and one or two other charities. He was Sir Bobby Charlton. I can't, you know, I still feel very emotional about it, because legend is a thing that's thrown around too often. And he was a giant of a football man. And, you know, we lose people in the game. Of course, that era of players coming to the end now. But there's, you know, it's having the same effect, I think, on football supporters as the death of Bobby Moore had. Because these were meaningful men who strode outside the football pitch as colossus. And he was like, you know, Muhammad Ali had that effect on the world of sport and the other world, you know, the rest of the world outside of boxing. And I think Bobby had that effect, both Bobbies, Moore and Charlton, they were, you know, they had this effect on the world. And I was listening to Tim Vickery, the South American football expert, on Talk Sport the other day, and he was saying that it's had a big effect, his death, in Brazil. Because Brazil always thought the game against England in 1970, which was the game that won them the World Cup, because it meant they had an easier draw through to the final, and it so happened that every team they then played had been knackered by the previous game they'd had to play. But Brazil always turn around and say that was the game that won us the World Cup, the game against England. And Charlton was held in such reverence in Brazil and around the world. And, you know, Sir Bobby Charlton, just massive.
Yeah. Whether you believe this or not, but he played 606 games for Manchester United, scoring 199 goals.
That's just league, Terry.
And here's the other thing about that. Just
758 in all, 249 goals in all.
Well, there you go. Thanks for that. And guess what? All played on a potato field and played with those balls that, and unless you of our generation, I just remember the heavy leather wet ball and the way he could smash that ball or move that ball around. It was obviously to his detriment in the end, that big heavy ball, because obviously the heading and all that of those balls have caused a lot of problems with a lot of people. But yeah, I mean, sadly, there's not enough footage of that generation either, is there? You know, I've gone on YouTube and looked a lot of his stuff up, but there's just little sort of clips of stuff and whatever. But what a player. The only other player I can think was like that was Jimmy Greaves as well. They were kind of futuristic players. They played a bit like we play now, whereas everyone else was just knocking and moving and getting stuck in mud. But they seemed to have this way, especially when Bestie came along from Man United as well. The interplay between the two of them on the clips that I've seen was just stupid.
Yeah, when he, it's well known that Sir Bobby didn't really understand George, didn't really understand George's way of life, and the whole George Best shtick, if you like. You know, I knew George much better than I knew Sir Bobby. And
I did quite a few things with George. He was great fun.
Yeah, he was. I mean, he had his demons. We all know that. But, you know, and together on the football field, they were wonderful. People say, well, yeah, but, you know, they wouldn't have worked in the modern era. Yes, they would, because the great players would have had the benefits of the training facilities, the nutritional guidance, the physiotherapy, the medical backup that they have now. And therefore, they would have been fitter. They would have been able to cope with the modern athleticism of the game. Great players would be great players in any era. And, you know, this was a man who was recognised for his work off the field of play, knighthood, as I say, the English Hall of Fame, worked for bids for the Olympics and so on. And I think he was part of the 2012 Olympic bid as well.
There was also the era where you could literally, not break your leg, but hobble off, have 5 minutes on the bench and come back on again. I mean, there was no subs. You could come back on, couldn't you?
Yeah, well, there weren't any subs.
That's right. You know? There was no subs then. So when you were saying about fitness and stuff, they had to get on with it.
I know. People talk about, you know, who were the substitutes in the 1966 World Cup final. There weren't any.
There weren't.
So it was. He worked very, very closely, I think, with Sir Ralph Ramsey. Not that any player was ever really allowed to get close to Sir Ralph. I think probably Bobby Charlton was the closest to him, closer than Bobby Moore, I think. He had the record number of caps until Bobby Moore overtook him and another player subsequently, of course. And where does he lie in the pantheon of great England midfield players? People were saying the other day, was he the greatest English footballer that's ever existed? Well, that of course, is open to debate, because there have been so many great footballers. I would put him right up there. He's always been in my England 11. When people have said, who's your England midfield? I've always had Bobby Charlton in there. And people have gone, why? You can't have Bobby Charlton from a different era. Well, I saw him play. I was lucky enough to see him. I went to Eastville when Bristol Rovers played Manchester United in a League Cup tie. You know, a Bristol City person. But I went to Eastville to watch them, because Manchester United brought a strong team down then, to see those giants of the game. Mm. You know, even if it was at the Rovers, then it was just something that we'll always remember. I'll always remember. You know, I was lucky enough to see him play for his country, and he would be in there. Another day on the podcast, we'll do probably our all-time England 11s. It's a good idea.
Yeah.
But he would be in there. He would be, you know, he would be an England attacking midfield player off the left-hand side. And, I just think he's right up there, not just with the best of England of all time, but one of the world's greatest players of all time.
I didn't realise his uncles were Jackie Milburn, George Milburn, weren't they? Jim Milburn and Stan Milburn.
That's right.
What a family that was as well.
Yeah. And, you know, this was the classic era when they said, you know, in the Northeast, you just had to shout down a mine shaft and a footballer would come up. Well, that was the truth with his brother. Jack was a miner, and Bobby Charlton was an electrician. I think his mum made him do an apprenticeship because she wasn't sure that it would work for him as a footballer. So I think he was an apprentice electrician for a little while, something like that. Anyway, electrical engineer, he was an electrical engineer, Terry. I know that because my dad was by trade. And I remember him telling me about Sir Bobby Charlton being an electrical engineer, and that I should make sure that I had something to fall back on if I didn't make as a footballer, which I didn't. That's how I knew. Yeah, he was an electrical engineer, Sir Bob. But you know, they had wonderful football in their pedigree, if you like, and they came from a wonderful footballing area, from up there in Ashington in Northumberland. And I think he never forgot those humble backgrounds. There was a split between him and Jackie that lasted a long time. Well, I'm not going to go into that really, because I don't know all the truth of it. It was something to do with his mum and I think his wife. But anyway, you know, that was sad, but nothing as much as the sadness of his loss. You know, and it is. It's strange, isn't it? I don't know, as life goes on and we do get older, and you know, these heroes of ours, whether it be in football or cricket or film and TV, are coming to an end, and I don't deal with the sadness of it all very well.
No,
I think we should get used to
get
more inured, immune to it. But it's very difficult when someone who was, you know, when you first collected Sucker Stars stickers for the albums, Bobby was there. I've still got my first one from the 68, 69, 70 era, and he's in there, you know. And, the coins, the World Cup coins and all these things, Bobby was in there. And so he's like a massive hero of mine and many people of our era when we were young kids.
Yeah, when you go to Manchester to do commentaries, would you bump into him then? Because he was always around, wasn't he?
No, not really. I might see him in the distance. I might, he might have come up the tunnel at the end. Very, very rarely that happened. I can't really remember it, but he might, might say hello. But that would be it, really. At football functions, once or twice. Had conversations, short conversation, but it would normally be when I was with Bobby Moore, and to be honest, Terry,
that must be mad standing with those two together.
He wanted to speak to Bobby Moore. He didn't want to speak to me.
No, I get that. I've been in those. So, I've been privy to that.
I was. I didn't know him well at all, and I'm not going to pretend that I did. I knew Jackie better because I worked with Jack on the telly. And when I was covering Ireland in the 1994 World Cup finals, got fairly close to Jack then. That's where it started with him. In 1990, the World Cup finals in Italy, I was lucky enough to be allowed into the Irish team hotel only because Bobby Moore was working with me.
Yeah.
And we used to sit, like I said before on the podcast, used to sit in the Irish players bar down there in the hotel between Jack. I used to sit between Jack and Bobby. My God, Bobby Moore, that is. And it was like, I was like a kid on Christmas Day, and Jack would get, Morris Setters, who is his sort of number two. He said, go up and get the drinks. And Morris would go up and get the drinks. And we just sit there, and the players are off on the other side of the bar, just looking across and looking at Jack and looking at Bobby Moore and looking at this thing sitting between the two of them and going, who the hell is he?
No, I don't think they'd be going, that's Jonathan Pearce.
But I knew Jack better than Bobby. It's just, if I think of Manchester United, and people say, "What about Sir Alex's team?" Do you think of Keane and Beckham and all these things? No, when I think Manchester United, and when you go up there, the first thing you see is the statue of the three of them. I think best Charlton law. That's the Manchester United I first think of, because that's the Manchester United that I grew up watching on television on Match of the Day when there was only ever one game on, really. And if we went up to see relatives in London, the big match would be on with Brian Moore, and you'd see more games from top level, because down at HTV Land in Bristol, we'd have Bristol City, Bristol Rose, Cardiff and Swansea and so on. And you'd see that Manchester United team, and it was, Paddy Craren in midfield and Alex Stepney in goal and all these players, and young Brian Kidd, and oh, goodness me. And so they were sort of pin-up boys, weren't they, for our generation. And Georgie, everyone loved. Everyone wanted to be Georgie Best. Again, if we were ever playing out in the park and, we were playing cup-tie football and one team would be Arsenal, one team would be Manchester United, whatever, then I wouldn't be any of them. I'd be Paddy Craren, because that's the sort of footballer I wanted to be. I wasn't graced with ability to be Georgie Best or Bobby Charlton. Few were. I would always be the hatchet man in midfield, because that's sort of what I was. But anyway, there you are. He was, everyone else wanted to be Bobby Charlton.
And, yeah, Bobby Charlton. He was a lot shorter than I always think, because you always see him on the telly. Always everyone looks bigger on the telly, don't they? But I just didn't realise he was only 5'8". Jackie was a lot bigger then. Jackie was a big boy, wasn't he?
Well, Jackie was a giant, and he had his huge neck. Jackie was like, I remember going up from Cornwall to watch Leeds United. My dad got friendly over the years with Don Revy, and we went up there, and uncle got us tickets, and we stood at the Revy end. And the sort of cop end, if you like, of Elland Road, and watched them play. That's the first time I saw Jack play live, I think, and that was against Derby. It was 3-0, and he strode up the pitch in about 10 strides. And Jack was and scored that day, I seem to remember. They won 3-0, and he was a giant of a man, but he was it's a lovely story about the Football Writers Association Football of the Year Award 1 year, and Jack presented the trophy to the winner that year, and he was looking around, and back in the day they had pictures of all the previous winners going all the way back to Sir Stanley Matthews, the first winner in the 50s, all around, black and white pictures all around the room hung up. And Jack looked around and he's gone, I can't believe it. He said, look at all these previous winners here, and so-and-so. And he said, there's our kid. Hmm. And so he referred to his brother, and he said, and there am I. And he said, I can't understand why my picture's up on the wall here, because I couldn't play the game. He was so, he was brilliant.
He could play the game.
Yeah, he was so. And he told another story that day, Big Jack, but when they were flying back from Mexico in the World Cup finals in 1970. And
someone was trying to sell him a bracelet.
No, he was he decided that was going to be it. You know, he decided that was the end of his world. He played 30, he only played 35 times for England, Jack Charlton. And anyway, Sir Ralph's sitting at the back of the plane, and Jack's thinking, right, I'm gonna retire now. I'm gonna tell. But they were so in awe of Sir Ralph, he didn't know how to tell him. And he only played the one game in 1970, I think, against Czechoslovakia. Anyway, so he didn't know how to tell him. So as he's telling this story, the football writers, he said, I don't know. And then the pilot comes on and says, fashion seatbelts are coming into Heathrow to land. So he goes back to Sir Ralph, and Sir Ralph's reading the newspaper at the back, glasses on and everything. And he's great times, Alf, absolute privilege, getting old, I'm slowing down, I don't know how to tell you. I think it's time for me to retire. And Sir Ralph looked over the newspaper, dropped his glasses, and turned around to Jack and said, so do I. And that was it, you know. That was it. There was no great emotional scene, but that was Jackie all over. And
did you ever watch the two of them play against each other?
Not live. I would have seen it on the telly.
Was there no love lost on the pitch? Because I don't. It's not really. It's just a little bit before my time, believe it or not.
I don't think there would have been, only because they were playing for Leeds United and Manchester United.
That's what
I'm
getting.
No quarter asked or given, but I don't know if. Bobby played in that game early 70s when Manchester United, they were on Match of the Day back-to-back, and they romped it against Southampton 1 week and Manchester United the next, or a couple of weeks later, whatever it was. And they were playing outrageously good football, leads, keeping possession, like 20, 30 passes in a row. Hadn't been seen before in English football, that. And Bobby might have played it at that time. But, he won everything he could at Manchester United back at that time. The major competitions, the cup, the league, the European Cup. He was just an incredible footballer, you know. And you will always remember them in Bobby Charlton's lashing them in from 20, 30 yards out. And the great players recognised, Beckenbauer recognised the ability, Pelé recognised the ability, Eusebio in 66 recognised what he was. And, the tributes have come thick and fast, and quite rightly. I think Gary Lineker said he was the best English player. I'm not too sure that it was Gary who said that this week. As I say, that's open for debate. Everyone will have their own opinion, but he would be in my all-time English 11.
Yeah, definitely. That's Bobby Charlton. A fine tribute, Jonathan, from you there. And our thoughts, of course, are with the family. And thanks for listening.
Sports Social Podcast Network.
Hello, it is Ryan, and we could all use an extra bright spot in our day, couldn't we? Just to make up for things like sitting in traffic, doing the dishes, counting your steps, you know, all the mundane stuff. That is why I'm such a big fan of Chumba Casino. Chumba Casino has all your favorite social casino-style games that you can play for free anytime, anywhere with daily bonuses. That should brighten your day a little. Actually, a lot. So sign up now at chumbacasino.com. That's chumbacasino.com.
No purchase necessary. VGW. Void where prohibited by law. See terms and conditions. 18 plus.